Thank you, everybody. Thank you for your patience. I got very confused. I thought my talk was at the same time as yesterday's keynote. It's entirely my fault that I kept you all waiting. Thank you for bearing with me. I'm very, very happy to be here. How many people here have an account on the Fediverse? Good. And how many of you have primarily have an account on Mastodon as your home on the Fediverse? Fewer, which is what I expected. And how many people have no idea what I'm talking about when I use this word Fediverse? Please do not be shy. If you've never heard it, that's fine. Okay, thank you. Great. And again, thank you for being here today. This is my first time here at FrostCon. I have been involved with organizing some open source events myself in my time. And if you are on the organizing team, if you're one of the volunteers, if you work with the university and support the event, thank you so much. These spaces are so valuable and so important, and I really appreciate it. It's a team effort, and I was talking to some volunteers yesterday and hearing how they've come back, you know, maybe for the second or third year, because they get value from being part of this community and learning from people. And it's just part of the spirit of open source, and I think that's really important for us to understand. Almost a year ago today, actually on the 15th of August last year, I wrote a blog post which turned out to be a little bit important. Now, I'm not a celebrity blogger. I don't expect people to have necessarily heard of me or this particular post, but let me tell you about it briefly. I don't know about the rest of you. It's been a year. It's been a really long year in the world, right? There's been a lot of stuff happen in lots of different places, and so this seems even longer ago than a year. But I've been struck by something that had just happened on the internet, and it was that the world's richest man, he's, I believe, a hobbyist who makes exploding spacecraft, sometimes sells cars. He was publicly attacking politicians from the UK on his personal bragging platform. And before that was called, that was his personal bragging platform, it was a thing that I used to work on. I used to work at Twitter. And look, I know it had a mixed reputation. We could have done better from time to time, but it was a pretty good job at connecting people online. And unfortunately, we also did a pretty good job at getting lots of governments and public institutions to communicate on that platform. So when this guy started saying things and attacking politicians, as we know, not surprisingly, very often targeting women, it made me really quite angry. And it also made me realize that these organizations had suddenly put their critical public communications in the hands of what turned out to be a bad actor. If you're a government institution, almost certainly you're running your own infrastructure, hosting your own website, you've got some level of secure communication, whether or not you end up using something like a third-party fork of Signal that's insecure, that's your issue. But broadly speaking, governments kind of take security seriously. But a lot of them now, partly through my previous life, what I used to work on, have ended up with their public communications in a bad place. Now, I'm not claiming that the UK was the only injured party here. We know that individual went on to say deeply damaging and offensive things to many communities around the world and here in Europe. But one of the themes at FrostCon this year, of course, is clouds over Europe. What does all of this mean, all of this change in the world mean for us here? I don't know if any of you came to Frank Karlicek's talk yesterday, but he showed that great so-called detailed analysis of where important data was in the world with this big star on the west coast of America. And since the time I wrote that blog post, that long very long year ago, we've seen authoritarianism advancing in many places around the world. And the clown who wrote the post, prompted my post, of course, infamously took a chainsaw to much of the information on the US internet, which good citizens, people on the internet, have tried to save in many cases and move elsewhere. And it's no exaggeration to say that our freedoms are at risk. You can't help but notice that I'm from the UK. The irony of somebody coming from a country that has just passed a law like the Online Safety Act coming here to talk about this issue is absolutely not lost on me. I am a Star Wars fan. This will become important as we go through the talk. And at times it does feel to me a little bit like the Europe and the European Union is at the heart of a rebel alliance against these forces. And I know that Europe and Germany are not without challenges. But instead of spiraling downwards, we're going to do a little bit of spiraling downwards in this talk, but what I want to do is also talk about why we should remain hopeful under these clouds. Okay, so who is this British guy standing down here in front of you all? A very short, quick self-introduction. Andy Piper. You may know me if you do. Have seen me online as a developer advocate, developer community person. I have hand-waved in front of audiences in different places about different topics. And I'm currently fortunate enough to be working on something that I am very excited about, very passionate about. I'm head of communications at Mastodon, but I'm a techie. I'm a long-term contributor to lots of different open source things. I also am a pen plotter artist. I like to make art with robots. I've been involved with MQTT. I've been involved with Cloud Foundry. I've been involved with MicroPython. I've helped with an event called OgCamp in the UK. This is my Mastodon handle. If you do want to take photos and mention me, then that's completely fine. 20 years ago, I worked at IBM, and I had a colleague there. I was younger than I am now, who was a distinguished engineer who I looked up to, and he described himself as a technology optimist. And I rather like that term. I try to be an optimist, and it's not easy. Now, there is another gentleman from the West Coast of America called Mark Andreessen, who more recently co-opted a similar term and referred to it as the techno-optimist manifesto. I'm not a techno-optimist. Technology optimist. Technology is a tool that can help us as humans be better. A sometimes less known part of my background, I am a historian. I went to university and studied history. I'm self-taught in technology thanks to open source, thanks to a lot of very generous people around the world who have regularly, for the last 30 years, put technology online, put their blog posts online, shared what they know with the community, and I've learned from that. So, fundamentally, I'm a historian. I care about people, I care about society, and I care about what we're all building together. So let's go on a short historical tangent. In the 3rd century BCE, the Greeks constructed a large library at Alexandria. You may have heard of this, the Grand Library, Great Library at Alexandria. It was not the only library at the time, but it was a very important one. It was in a port, and it represented a large collection of then human knowledge. And it demonstrated cultural power. And some ancient writers, the writer Galen, claimed that ships that docked in the port were searched for scrolls, which were then taken to the library. Copies were returned to the owners. Now, I would like to wonder whether the people who were sent to crawl the decks of these ships to find the scrolls, ignoring the requests of the shipmasters not to board and deny their operations, were somewhat similar to the situations we see today. Now, of course, This was one library. From there, libraries spread, and there were libraries elsewhere as well. And that was a good thing for humans, right? Because we could all go and find information. And of course, when I was growing up, I'm sure many of you in the room grew up through the 80s, 70s and 80s, we went to a library to do our research for our schoolwork. We learned to find the right book in those big encyclopedias. Now, in the end, there was a lot of information. So some clever people found a way to help people get to that information more easily. I don't know about the rest of you. This was huge for me for 20 years. Not so useful at the moment, but that's a different story. When my nieces were very young in the early 2000s, I don't remember what the family conversation was. It was probably a capital city I couldn't remember or something like that. They said, "It's okay, Uncle Andrew. We will ask Google because Google knows everything." Now, either it was me wanting to mansplain or just, you know, because I'm a geek, I then set about attempting to explain to a four-year-old in detail all the bits of the internet and how everything worked from the computer and the keyboard and the screen and the CPU all the way out to the network. A little bit much for that age group. I love the web, and as a historian, I firmly believe that the internet and the web are possibly humanity's greatest creations. Human knowledge connected in an absolutely real web, spider-like web of hyperlinks, a decentralized system of repositories of knowledge, digital libraries spread throughout the world. When I grew up in the 80s, simply couldn't have communicated with people on the opposite side of the planet in real time, in video, in high quality. Mind-blowing. We all interact now with this stuff all the time. You're on your phones right now, you're looking things up. It's incredible. This is unbelievable, really. We should not forget how amazing we are. We should be grateful for and we should be proud of what we made, humans. If there's one thing to take away from what I'm talking about today, it's that humans are amazing. Humans, you are amazing, and we together are more amazing because we build things together. We build better things by sharing together. We need to hold on to this. We are incredible creative organisms. There's AI. We are not AI, and we have done this. So here we are, we're proud, right? Great. We've done this. How cool are we? Humans are also lazy. We get complacent. We forget how incredible this stuff is that we're using every day. It's just there. If I don't have my Wi-Fi, I get annoyed. We are happy not to have to think about hard things. We don't like to change our habits. We don't like to confront difficult problems. We don't like to rock the boat. We kind of taught to just accept the way things are. The internet started as a space for collaboration. And the World Wide Web, this is when the next cube that Sir Tim Berners-Lee ran the first website on was on display at the Science Museum in London. The World Wide Web offered these incredible opportunities for people to share, connect, and create together freely. It was meant to be a space of open exchange. I'm really happy to see a poster of Sir Tim Berners-Lee out here in the hallway here at the Hochschule. He famously said it was part of his little bit in the London Olympics, where he kind of was in the opening ceremony. This is for everyone. The problem was that as the web grew, as we know, so did the power of a small number of technology giants. And today, I'm not teaching you anything new here, a few dominant companies set the rules for most online social spaces. We thought we were building a global digital public square. How cool, how awesome are we humans? But it evolved into this collection of private, profit-driven platforms that prioritize data collection for advertising and algorithms to drive engagement over user well-being and what we actually want from the world and our technology. And it was easy. It seemed to be free. So we went there. We really didn't think too much about the broader consequences. In February 2023, about 4 months after firing myself and a couple of thousand of my colleagues, Twitter shut down its free API access and cut off researchers, journalists, and disaster response organizations from their data. Now, I know because I was there and I worked on similar situations that during flooding incidents in the Philippines, in other scenarios in the US, that data was useful at times to emergency response organizations. We know that local councils and public services using X and Facebook and so on have seen dramatic collapse in their organic reach thanks to algorithms that prioritize clickbait engagement for silly stories over real useful information. Anybody with enough money can pay to get their message in front of users. And of course, centralization went further than all of this. If we think about our wonderful distributed set of libraries, digital libraries interconnected everywhere in the world, wherever people want to run a web server with a bit of information that could be useful, AI wants to centralize all that knowledge back and reduce it down into tokens that are basic building blocks and then just give you back just stuff made from building bricks rather than genuine, authentic thoughts from other humans. And you can argue that AI, whilst it could be democratizing for some, makes it harder to discover absolutely novel new ideas because it's built on previous ones and just regurgitating things. And with the shift in political alignments in the last 18 months, of course, we're seeing increasing numbers of headlines like this one. Please excuse me that this one is from the UK. Having successfully imposed economic sanctions on itself by exiting the European Union, the UK finds itself with a huge Microsoft bill that is incredibly difficult to shift. And of course, I know there are ongoing discussions about these same issues across Europe. I'm part of some of them through my role at Mastodon. We're also part of the Eurostat conversations. So I'm very aware that these are critical topics. So here we are in 2025. Here I've been, right? Yes, everybody, it's terrible. Everything's terrible. Big tech companies are taking all our code and data and renting it back to us. We heard from Daniel Stenberg yesterday that AI slot bug reports are ruining our lives as open source maintainers. Nobody wants to change their behavior because it's too hard. We're all very tired. You know, it would also mean like taking responsibility, having to, you know, think a bit more differently. It's just too hard. I'm not seeing a lot of like people shaking their heads or anything here. This is worrying. Okay, so let's think about this. Freedom in terms of the digital world is inseparable from who controls the infrastructure we depend on. If we accept the idea that the medium shapes the message, what happens when we don't control that medium? And we don't. And this is the core premise of what we're discussing so urgently since the US presidential changeover in January, in particular, digital sovereignty. Now, we have a toolbox that can help us here. And it's the same one that is trying in some directions to control us. The internet connects us, and open source and open standards mean that we can build better alternatives together. And that is actually incredibly powerful. We don't have to accept what people say is the new norm. When I say better alternatives, I mean resilient, diverse, locally owned and managed systems. And this, my friends, is where open source communities shine. This is what we've been doing for 30 years. Frank from Nextcloud yesterday talked about how federation is a real alternative to that centralization of our data, the new oil on the west coast of the US, as he humorously kind of boiled it down to. Of course, we also know that tremendous amounts of data are being collected in other countries like China. So now let's talk about the Fediverse. For those that don't know what on earth I'm talking about when I refer to the Fediverse, it can be thought of like the web, except it's kind of the social layer of the web. It's built on an open standard called ActivityPub, which is governed at the W3C, which also looks after the HTML and related standards. There are many websites in the world. They all look different. They have slightly different ways of interacting. There are a few common ways of interacting with them, the well-known hamburger menu that you know to look for on a website now if there's going to be a menu system. But generally speaking, websites have different looks and feels. And the Fediverse means that there are multiple social apps, social websites, that also look a bit different, have some different features, but can interoperate. I'm wearing a few of the names on my T-shirt. It enables, the ActivityPub enables the platforms like Mastodon and PeerTube and PixelFed to interoperate, and none of them have a centralized owner. And anybody can join the network, wherever you are, without seeking permission from a gatekeeper. I mentioned I was at Twitter for a while. I was there for as an employee for 9 years. I joined the platform in 2007, so it was a year after it came out. And it was life-changing. But I'm not going to lie, it was amazing. I have this wonderful network of people around the world that I've got to know online, primarily through being on Twitter. And again, I also got two jobs through being on Twitter. I got my job at VMware to work on Cloud Foundry because I was posting about public speaking when I was at IBM and people had seen some of my talks. And then I got my job at Twitter by doing developer advocacy and them coming and asking me to go and join them. And I really wanted at the time for Twitter's API to become really open and everybody to have access and give more access to more features. Now, a little thing that you may or may not remember called Cambridge Analytica happened to another social network. And my thoughts on that subject rapidly changed. But the other thing I learned at Twitter was it's incredibly hard to build a global room for open speech. One size does not fit all. One giant platform for everyone everywhere doesn't work. And the reason is because when you try to moderate or regulate that space, it has to get reduced down to the lowest common denominator of shared understanding of rules. And then people try to enforce that. And the majority of people end up very unhappy. This is now an older visualization, and it's a bit of an eye test. I'm not going to expect you to understand all of it. This is from 2022. If there are any data scientists in the room who have fun with these kind of diagrams, then please go and have a look at this. It's published online and see if you're interested in updating it to a more modern, updated version. But what you're looking at here is an older visualization of the Fediverse where they've done some clustering. And you can see there's some language clusters, there's some geographic clusters, there's some topic-based clusters. And overall, you know, individual nodes in this whole thing would have changed. Perhaps big clusters might have shifted. But I don't think it would have changed a significant amount, possibly, hopefully, a little bit bigger. So there's a green dot over there that is circled in black. And we're going to zoom in on that one. That is where I live. This is the server, the Mastodon instance that I'm on. It's an instance called Macaw. It's called Macaw because when I was at Twitter, we had an internal application framework called Macaw. So when I left Twitter, and many people left Twitter all at the same time, we set up a Mastodon instance, and I'm on that one. I had previously been on a different Mastodon instance, different Mastodon server, and I moved my whole network over there. And sorry, let me just go back. You'll see that I'm in a cluster here near Fosterdon. There's a UK one over here. There's some math stuff. There's InfoSec. So, you know, a lot of things I'm interested in. Art is up there as well. So that's where I've been living since 2022. And I think that is very analogous to real human communities. Because I don't know about you, but I probably wear several different faces through the day. I have one way of expressing myself in the family group chat, with my group of friends, with my coworkers in our chat channels, when I'm on stage, when I'm meeting somebody on public transport. We live in different communities, have different languages and cultures and customs, but we still travel between places on planes and trains to talk to one another and share ideas. So, important disclaimer before I go on, Mastodon is not the Fediverse. A lot of you already know this because you're not using Mastodon, and that's okay, but you're in the Fediverse. Mastodon is part of this constantly evolving space that is made up of different platforms. There's other software, that's great. Open source is great for this. I use GNOME and Vim, by the way, just to make clear my affiliations in other respects. This is the open source way. You could choose Akama or Miski or Snack or Glitch. There's a really weird microblogging app called Honk, which you can self-host. There's photo and video apps. There's 3D printing catalogs. There's book collections. And that's great. Andy, this all looks very complicated. It's very confusing. Okay. Cast your mind back before you got on board with Linux. Did Linux seem scary and confusing, and were you panicking and needing loads of hand-holding? Same with Twitter. It's not more confusing. Well, maybe a little more confusing. It's not really that much harder than what you use now before you used it. And it's more powerful. And it's open, and you get to help to make it better. And at Mastodon, we've made a decision that we want to be billionaire-proof. So we will be creating a foundation here in Europe this year to make sure that the code and IP are not owned by a single individual. It's going to take funding. We don't have a billionaire, so we appreciate donations. Thank you. The lesson we can learn from the past 30 years of open source, the past 20 years of Frostcon, the past 23 years of Debian, the past 27 or however many years of curl that Daniel spoke about yesterday, is that we're successful as a community when we build things together. And this means that when we talk about growing the Fediverse, it's not just about me coming here as head of cons for Mastodon and saying, everybody should be on Mastodon. I'd love you to be on Mastodon. I'd love you to love Mastodon. But I'd much more generally be happy for people to make choices that enable them to have long-term freedom. We need more interconnected, interoperable systems using open standards. We need fresh ideas. We need more people building together. We need more servers here in Europe. We need more governments and public institutions hosting their own voices, owning their own channels. We need more infrastructure in the social web outside of the United States. If you're not in the Fediverse yet, I really encourage you to join us because it's open for you to help us to shape it. And we want to make it work for everyone. Alexandra gets it. I saw this post. I went and checked with her on the Fedora booth earlier to make sure she was okay with me putting it in the presentation. She makes a point here that there's no better time than now to aim for federated self-hosted GitForges. The logical next question is, when will Mastodon get off of GitHub and go to Codeberg? That's not happening right now. I will tell you that because it's just a complicated thing to do. But it's definitely something that is on our radar. We're very, very aware of it. I just thought I'd get ahead of that question. There's Nextcloud that's doing federated file sharing. There's Codeberg. And they're all thinking in ways of strategies to better support the world, the way the world actually works. Damn it, I've just ruined my own joke. It's very rare that an individual human goes into a cave, works away at something, comes out with a brand new idea that is world-changing. Okay, there was that one time. But even that one time went through a lot of subsequent revisions, a lot of learning. So, friends, I want to leave you with these thoughts. The internet is decentralized. The internet has endured, survived, evolved, grown because it is decentralized. Everyone has had opportunities to contribute to it. This decentralized library of human ideas is one of our greatest achievements as a global society. Federation is hard. We know that in the real world. The European Union doesn't always move in a straightforward direction, but it works. No one is an island. Something I love about being part of the open source community is that everybody has that chance to contribute and learn and bring their own unique opinion. I am not optimistic about every change that happens in the world. I am definitely not optimistic. I went to a talk that Cory Doctorow gave not so long ago, and somebody said, "Cory, how do you look? How do you come across so optimistic?" And he said, "I'm not optimistic. But we've got tools here. We've got opportunities. In the end, we need to make the active choice, understand the changes that are happening around us, and actively choose the ones to engage with. We shouldn't just reject all change, all new things, all new platforms, because they're too hard. We don't make them easier unless we work together. If you didn't watch the TV show Andor, I really urge you to do so. Even if you're not a Star Wars fan, I think it's a great show anyway. No matter how bad things can seem, and this is something that Cory also said when challenged on this, we hold on to hope and we work quietly together. How many people here who have been coming to FrozCon for many, many years, or even those of you that may be able to remember back to the late 90s when Linux was first emerging, would be able to think that in 20, 30 years' time, Linux would be on games consoles, on our phones, in our cars, everywhere, and people just don't necessarily think about it, because they don't necessarily have to deal with all of the internals. In the end, our not-so-quiet revolution can win. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your talk. We now have some time for questions. Are there any questions?
Hi, thank you for the very nice talk. So you've talked about how you've decided to make Mastodon billionaire proof, but how, to what extent do you think we should be pushing for governments or intergovernmental organizations to fund open source in general?
Yes, I think that we should be encouraging. I mean, I believe in the principle of, you know, public service, public code, all that kind of thing. And I know that it is a challenging topic. I'm familiar at a very small level with stuff happening in Germany. I'm not qualified to talk on it. In the UK, I'm frustrated. I mean, that example from the register is just, you know, is incredibly frustrating to see. that we're on the hook there for however many billions of money to Microsoft. I think we absolutely should be encouraging public institutions to invest in supporting open source innovation. I probably, rather than paying individual developers, because that gets really complicated through some other level of funds. I know there's a sovereign tech fund, there's other sources of funds. We've been fortunate enough at Mastodon to take advantage of NGI and NLNet and one-off grants, but they're not particularly sustaining. They let us do a piece of work, a bit of functionality perhaps for a year. They don't necessarily keep us going and give us continuity, and that's something that we want to think about. How we channel that and convert that into a program that we can ask a government or a supra-governmental body like the EU to invest in, I don't know. We at Mastodon have been continuing to get involved where we can with conversations such as Eurostack and others around, you know, what could we do locally to build something. And something that is a little bit promising, but still very, really frustratingly slow from my personal perspective, is that I wrote this blog post a year ago. Probably two additional public bodies that I'm aware of in the EU that have come on board since then in terms of like hosting their own Fediverse instance. I would have loved to see more, and I hope we can see more. Does that answer the question at all? I know that I don't have concrete suggestions. I've got a series of thoughts about how we can encourage them and tell people, you're throwing good money after bad here, rather than investing in grassroots stuff that gives you local resilience.
Thank you, Andy. Everyone's on X, Twitter. Everyone's on WhatsApp. But also everyone knows someone else who's more advanced and is in the Fediverse. Now, if I go and ask someone, why are you still on WhatsApp? They will invariably say the same thing. Everyone else is, and I don't want to lose my network. So I disagree with you. It's not laziness and complacency. It's fear of missing out. How do we break this? How do I get my friends, my family, my colleagues to leave WhatsApp and go to Signal, to leave X and go to Mastodon? What do you propose?
Thank you. So how do we get our friends to move? I did talk about laziness, and you're right that I highlighted that, but that's certainly not the only reason. You're right to highlight the fact that, you know, the network effect is a key part of what Cory Doctorow writes about, right? In his shitification, you know, you get everybody there and they're all stuck. I use WhatsApp for my family chat because my mum is a little old to try and get her onto something different. I don't have any X accounts anymore. Well, I do. I run our company one, but that's just a different thing. I deleted 14 X accounts, which I felt really good about in the end. Anyway, it was painful. Yeah, how do we do that? And I think, it's a do what I say, don't do what I do type situation, I'll be honest with you, because I do use a load of those things that I've just been railing against. I it would be dishonest of me to say, oh, look at me, I'm better than everyone else because I'm only using open source. That's not true, right? I've got an iPad here, I'm using other things, right? How do we encourage people? And I think having my experience is having the conversations about how that data is being used, how those magic robot AI things are spitting out stuff that sounds so good and so convincing is because they're spying on things other people have written. I think there is both a gradual and a sudden element here. There's the continued chipping away of freedom and awareness of what's happening with systems. And then, of course, there's the big events. There's the Musk. There's the last week GitHub going into Microsoft AI division, whatever, right? Those moments that cause a bigger chunk to break off the iceberg, if you like. I'm mixing my metaphors a lot here. It's hard. We have to just keep having the conversations. I don't have the one solution here. And we have to... It's really easy to look at all the bad stuff and go, oh my God, there's no point. We come to events like this to meet each other, to remind ourselves what's good and why we are here. We need to uplift one another. That is something I take really seriously as a responsibility for to me, myself, and the world. I want to bring help to give other people that spark, give other people that enthusiasm and encouragement to go home from FrogsCon and say, I had a really cool weekend. Did you know about this cool app? If your parents aren't running Postmarket OS on their phone, then maybe it's the wrong app. But no, I mean, yeah, I think we get there bit by bit. And we're not going to win like that.
Hi, I'm Sasha.
Hi, Sasha.
I have a struggle, and I call it the walk your talk argument. We as an open source community often use for communication tools like Facebook, Instagram. We are putting our code on GitHub. Sometimes we use Discord for communication. And there are good alternatives out there, but we still struggle ourselves to use them and to really walk the talk and to use the tools ourselves, be a role model for our own community. So why? Why don't we walk the talk all together and use open tools for open source communities?
I hope I'm looking sad because I genuinely feel sad because I know that our team uses a bunch of things that are not as open as I would like us to role model, but I also know, and this is why I'm said about the GitHub possible future Codeberg or elsewhere transition, I know the amount of effort it will take us and time it will take us out of spending fixing bugs, working on new features to make such a transition. I'm still very optimistic and hopeful that we will do that, but I don't know when. Why? Good question. It's hard. We're resistant to change. We get used to things. We convince ourselves by deciding that we need the features that are there because we don't have the time to invest in adding the features ourselves to the thing that doesn't have them. And the story of my last 20 years of my life is making a bunch of compromises that hopefully get me slightly more forward each time, but I'm never all the way to where I want to be, and that's where I don't have anything to say other than we can do better together and we can help each other. If you have a way to quickly move an entire organization with goodness knows how many repositories from one source control mechanism to another with actions, then let's talk. And I know in our case, for example, the chat mechanisms we use is very much a product of where the project started and who it started with and how it, you know, the thing that they were familiar with at the time. And I don't think Discord had gone, I think they've IPO'd now, haven't they? So they're probably going to get even worse than they've been. I know I've got some annoying little thing trying to get me to play games in the corner all the time when I just want to talk to people about work. So, It's a complex moving set of platforms as well, as we all know.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for the talk. Building on a bunch of your themes and a couple of these questions, right? The internet needs federation. It always was federated until it became kind of locked up behind gates.
Yeah.
One of the things that those gated communities did was centralize defense against bad actors, at least for a while, until they no longer did. One of the challenges I've had in running any federated tools, even a mail server, is it's much harder as an individual to defend against a DOS, spam, et cetera. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any good immune systems for the Fediverse or for any federated software you could also highlight?
So the question is about sort of defense against bad actors, defense against the dark arts. That's a terrible analogy these days. It makes sense. And you're right. When I was at Twitter, we had channels to talk to Meta or to Google or whoever if there was a DDoS or we were concerned about misinformation from a place. Yeah, it's incredibly difficult when you're dealing with a distributed, federated network. There is an organization in the Fediverse called IFTAS, Independent Federated Trust and Safety, that I think is a brilliant idea. They struggled with funding. They had to cut back on a lot of the things that they offered. I'm still hopeful that in the future something will come back there and that more things will emerge. There's also a ton of fear that if there is one place you go for that advice or that defense, that you've just created the same problem again, right? You just moved the billionaire problem from there to there. Practical answer from where I work, Mastodon. We have some channels, which may or may not be on free open source chat infrastructure, where we talk to other administrators of some larger instances so that we know if there's a problem, we know if there's a spam attack, we know how people are trying to weaponize old accounts or find email services that are less reliable and so on. And we can build tools around that to try to mitigate. And at the moment, we're still a smaller attack area for bad actors, so probably less interesting, but and may not get as much attention as other parts of the internet. So that's one practical thing we try to do. We work with IFTAS. We want to improve things like sharing block lists. We've got a thing called Fediverse Auxiliary Service Providers, which is a concept which will enable people to build additional services that sit alongside the social bit of the Fediverse. So we've got one at the moment, which is an opt-in for search called FedDiscovery. In the future, there could be one for spam. There could be one for domain blocks, misinformation, those kind of things. And all of those are also intentionally decentralized. So you don't just say, I'm only going to subscribe to this auxiliary service provider doing discovery. You can say, I want to use four of them. And they all have, you know, different potentially SLAs or whatever like that. So we're trying to inherit the best parts of a decentralized system and apply some of those things. The other element of the answer is, I think that over time, the internet has learned as well to deal with some of these things. I say that with a note of caution, because I know that DNS is a problem there, right? But in principle, that's also decentralized and yeah, exactly. So, but you know, over time, you don't have just one email provider, you don't have just one whatever. You know, there's multiple services you can subscribe to, and that would be a goal for the future. So here we are, and we're certainly not on year one of the Fediverse, we're in year 15 or so, right? But the internet's been around longer, other things have been around longer, and I'm hopeful, to go back to that theme, that we can do better, we can grow more.
Hi. Hello. Very sorry for my English. I usually talk sign language, so I'm going to try my best. You talked about the Library of Alexandria in the beginning, and I think what's important to note is it wasn't burned down by a single bad actor. It was burned down by the Romans, by a whole regime. So, looking through history, that happened more and more again, especially as a German. I think I should remember that it wasn't one party, but it was a whole nation letting it happen. So looking right now at the internet, we see that there are many platforms that we thought of being a bit decentralized, who are now at the mercy of payment processors and governments and government restrictions. What can we do, or how do we look at single governments trying to restrict access or enforce change on platforms?
Thank you. That's really good. There's two things that I'm really interested in. First of all, the question you asked about how we deal with particular bad actors and governments. But I didn't say anything about the library being burned down, and you're right. It was famously burned by Julius Caesar by accident. But that's an interesting addition to the story that I didn't mention. We had a situation recently at Mastodon where a government, a nation, was using our code and weren't following the license. And that government is not known for being particularly democratic. And you know, we had to send them some emails and get them to follow the AGPL and publish their code. And they didn't answer any of the emails for a month. And then we got some messages from citizens of that country saying, hey, look, this is bad. So I ended up posting on our X account to the what turned out to be, I didn't know, the son-in-law of the president to say, could you talk to us, please? And suddenly we got their attention and they did actually publish their code. A challenge with that is that the code they published includes a load of logging code, which logs things like personally identifiable information like IP addresses, which we don't record in our own software that we publish. And yeah, I think I have a fairly broad worldview as I navigate my life and look at how things change. And you can perhaps think of the world as being somewhat self-healing. I hope it is, in the better good things happen in places, and unfortunately bad things happen in others for a period of time. Hopefully those places will learn. I don't know. How do we stop it? How do we find ways against it? I think, again, building multiple systems of multiple payment providers where we can make good choices in the future to avoid those kind of problems. Beyond those ideas, I don't have a this is the way, we must do this. And I don't think that's healthy anyway. I wouldn't want to be in charge of the world. I want to provide ideas, and I think one idea is to build more useful things that give people alternatives. And I'm sorry that's as far as my answer goes, but I think that's the thing we can do.
Our last question.
Thank you. To be honest, I don't like the sticker. I'm part of the Rebel Alliance. You know, when I'm a rebel at work, I'm not very successful. But if I'm fun at work, I'm more successful. So I would rather be part of a fun alliance. And I think this rebel attitude is good, it's necessary, but it will not last a long time. So a fun alliance, in my view, would be the better sticker.
I have another version, which I'm working on. And again, if you saw the Andor TV show at all, there's another excellent line: I have friends everywhere.